It is Friday, December the 2nd. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, the U.S. President-elect on a thank you tour with a stop in the state of Ohio.
You're going to be very happy. We're going to say right now, what are we going to do? We're going to make America great again.
Developments in French politics, plus the cruise line Princess, fined for pollution, but it's not the first time.
In the 1990s, there were several cases and a number of guilty pleas came out of that period. And a large part of the industry was under probation for an extended period of time.
That and more straight ahead.
So I kept hearing, you must win Ohio.
I'm Steve Norman. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump pledged at his first post-election victory rally on Thursday to heal America's deep wounds, saying the country has no choice but to come together and reject bigotry. At a stop in the state of Ohio, Mr. Trump thanked the people of the state for making it possible for him to be the next president.
So I kept hearing, you must win Ohio. You cannot win the presidency without Ohio. So we started, really, we were about even, right, at the beginning. And then point by point by point. And then we had a couple of little troughs. But with Ohio, there was no trough. It just kept getting better and better. Just better and better. And the end result is incredible. I love you, Ohio. This is a great place. Great people. I have so many friends. Thank you. Thank you. In the true sense, history called and the people of this great state answered. And you're going to be very happy. We're going to say right now, what are we going to do? We're going to make America great again. You watch.
And among the many other topics on which he commented, Mr. Trump said he will be nominating U.S. Marine retired General James Mattis to be his new defense secretary. President-elect referred to Mattis by his nickname, Mad Dog Mattis. Mattis got that moniker because of his tough talking and the leadership of the U.S. Central Command, giving him authority over troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Ohio was Mr. Trump's first stop on what he is calling a thank you tour to greet some of the supporters who turned out to support him on Election Day. Meantime, the glitz and glamour of Fifth Avenue in New York City is now the hottest political arena in the country. Trump Tower, or as some are calling it, White House North, is the president-elect's transition headquarters and home of the incoming First Family. The result is a tourist mecca for the curious, the logistical nightmare for security, and a unique challenge for the press. VOA's Ramon Taylor takes us there.
The Midtown Manhattan neighborhood surrounding Trump Tower is not only a shopping district and haunt for the rich and famous, it's the home of the president-elect's transition headquarters. Inside the main floor lobby, opposite four golden elevators, the White House transition press pool, responsible for reporting the ins and outs of key aides and possible cabinet members for the incoming administration, is cordoned off behind a velvet rope and waiting. Press pooler Hunter Walker says the job is a bit like fishing.
We sit here for long stretches where we don't see anybody, but you can't really lose focus because you never know who's going to walk through, and you need to be ready to identify them, jump up, and start throwing questions kind of at a moment's notice. There's no warning.
The marble-clad interior, with its lavish holiday decorations, myriad luxury shops, and dining options, is a hot spot for tourists who hope to capture a piece of the action.
The food's good. The service is wonderful. The building is just gorgeous. And we just like the atmosphere.
The 202-meter luxury high-rise is home to the billionaire businessman turned president-elect, along with notable celebrities like movie star Bruce Willis and Portuguese football star Cristiano Ronaldo, and high-end businesses, including Gucci. Now, during the holiday shopping season, retailers surrounding the tower have expressed financial concerns resulting from the logistical challenges of hosting the president-elect.
Our problem is that the customer flow is severely restricted. And based on discussions I've had with retailers, we're talking about the loss of tens of millions of dollars just for the Christmas season.
The city's mayor insists his priorities are elsewhere.
I will not tell you that Gucci and Tiffany are my central concerns in life, but But I will say the traffic situation is a very real problem.
And will likely remain a problem, with Melania Trump and her 10-year-old son, Barron, expected to stay in Trump Tower through the end of the school year in 2017.
We have committed a substantial number of resources to Trump Tower, a real substantial number, 24 hours a day around the clock.
The price tag for taxpayers? More than $1 million a day, according to city officials. Objectionable to many, but not all.
We have a president now that spends a lot of time other places in the White House and costing us a lot of money, and this is home for him, and I don't have a problem with that.
As the president-elect takes the oath of office in January, White House North will continue to pose a unique responsibility for New York police and the U.S. Secret Service in Manhattan, in addition to Trump's new home in the actual capital city. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
In a surprise announcement, France's unpopular leader, François Hollande, has said he will not run for re-election, leaving the leftist field wide open ahead of next year's vote, in which far right is expected to poll strongly. Lisa Bryant is in Paris with our report.
President Hollande becomes the first leader in recent French history not to run for a second term. He announced his decision in a hastily scheduled televised address to the nation.
Je ne peux accepter, je ne peux me résoudre même à la dispersion de la gauche, à son éclatement, parce qu'elle priverait de tout espoir de l'emporter.
He said he could not allow his already deeply divided leftist ranks to explode by running. That would end all hope for a victory in next spring's elections, paving the way for a conservative win or even the far right. Hollande's popularity has sunk to a record low, down to 4% last month. The left is indeed splintered, and two of his ex-ministers have thrown their hat into the race. Many expect Prime Minister Manuel Valls to follow. Hollande nonetheless defended his record and attacked conservative candidate François Fillon, who won the center-right race and who is considered to have a good shot at the presidency.
J'estime que le projet qu'il porte met en cause notre modèle social et nos services publics sans aucun bénéfice.
He criticized Fillon's program, which calls for tough economic reforms and cracking down on immigration and Muslims.
Quant à l'extrême droite, elle nous appelle au repli, à la sortie de l'Europe et du monde, et elle prend comme référence ce qui vient de se produire aux États-Unis.
He also took a stab at the anti-Europe, anti-globalization platform of far-right leader Marine Le Pen, who is also polling strongly. Drawing parallels with the upset victory of Donald Trump in the United States, Hollande said Le Pen's protectionist, inward-looking policies present the biggest dangers for the country. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And in Washington, this is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Prince's Cruise Lines will be paying a $40 million penalty after pleading guilty to 7 U.S. federal charges in an illegal ocean pollution case that involved one of the ship's use of so-called magic pipes to divert oily waste into waters. Into the largest ever criminal penalty for this, it's known as deliberate pollution. International Edition's Lori London asked Friends of the Earth senior marine policy analyst John Kaltenstein if other cruise ships have been caught doing something like this.
We have, actually. In the 1990s, there were several cases, and a number of guilty pleas came out of that period. And a large part of the industry was under probation for an extended period of time. And that period is the last kind of spike, if you were, in this kind of activity. And so this is it's an interesting development to see how far we've progressed, or maybe that we haven't progressed that far.
My understanding is that a whistleblower, engineer, who
quit
his job over the dumping, would you say it's likely that other cruise line companies have done the same thing?
Well, they have in the past. I mean, I think a question is what is going on currently, right? And we're talking about Princess Cruise Lines within the Carnival family. So I think there's definitely a question as to what kind of culture is pervading the Carnival group and its line. Is this widespread, these types of practices?
Besides illegally dumping contaminated waste and oil, are you aware of other violations that were uncovered?
Primarily for this incident, or these incidents related to Princess, the crime deals with oil pollution and illegal discharge. And beyond that, the covering up of these incidents.
How detrimental can something like this be to our oceans and waterways?
At a local level, depending on how extensive the amount of oily bilge water is at issue, it can have discrete effects on marine life in that area. And also, problematically, is that if you consider these illegal discharges, and even legal ones in aggregate, there is concern that it is having an effect just because of the amounts at issue on our marine life. And it's very much a concern, and it extends even beyond the cruise ship industry to the freight industry as well, tankers, cargo ships, container ships, et cetera. So this is a difficult issue. It's really a concern for environmental groups and others.
So these other industries, like the freighter industry, they're potentially doing the same sorts of things. Is there some sort of regulation? Is there some sort of oversight?
Yes, they are doing these types of things, and the DOJ, the Department of Justice in the United States, has prosecuted these crimes, both for cruise ships and also cargo ships, and these cases are ongoing. They continue to this day. It's a real concern because sea, our oceans are an awfully big place, and it's difficult to adequately enforce these regulations. And you see in this case, we had a whistleblower that came forward with this information. Otherwise, we might not have gleaned what had transpired, and this would have continued. So that's, a frustrating situation, I think, in that, a lot of times we're dependent upon the good deeds of others that pinpoint these illegal activities.
What about the cruise ship industry in general? People go on them for leisure. What's your view on the cruise industry in general, just by the nature of what it is?
What Friends of the Earth in the United States has had an issue with for many years now is that the rhetoric of the cruise industry has always been, we are operating according to the law, we go above and beyond standards, why would we want to pollute places that we visit? Doesn't make business sense. It's not smart. But what we found in the 90s and now with this enormous case with respect to Princess, these incidents do occur. And so one wonders how they're behaving generally and what kind of impacts these are having on the environment. The detriments are outweighing the benefits in certain cases.
Are there certain things within a cruise ship that automatically need to be released into the waterways? I mean, what about there are restrooms,
Right.
Where does all this stuff go?
So there are a lot of waste streams coming off of a cruise ship. As you mentioned, there's sewage or black water, it's called, and gray water, which is the water from showers, laundry, galley, those sources. And oftentimes there are standards in place, and there's a question of how strict these standards are. Are they robust enough? Where's the enforcement mechanism? Where's the compliance? There's very real questions around that. There are definitely good arguments that the amount of waste and the kind of severity of waste is a real concern, and that the standards and then the compliance regime are not up to protecting our marine waters. So it extends beyond oil. It goes into sewage and gray water and other, pollutants coming off the ship.
John Kaldenstein is a senior marine policy analyst at Friends of the Earth. He was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. In a statement, Princess Cruise Line said it was extremely disappointed that employees had violated company policy and federal law regarding discharge of pollutants. The cruise line said it cooperated with investigators after the magic pipe was unveiled in 2013 and has taken numerous steps to fix the problem. It is time now to see what's trending on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here with the latest about pharmaceutical executive Martin Scorsese, who got the nickname the most hated man in America. Hey, G.
Hi, Steve. The reason why the media nicknamed him the most hated man in America is because he jacked up the price of Daraprim, a medication used to treat parasitic infections, from $13.15 to $750 per pill at one point. Students at Sydney Grammar School in Australia found a cheap way to create the active ingredients of the drug, and the cost came out to be $2 per pill. Naturally, Shkreli was not pleased. He tweeted, "These kids who made Daraprim reminds me of Ahmed who made the clock. Dumb journalists want a feel-good story." He also tweeted, "Labor and equipment costs? Didn't know you could get physical chemists to work for free. I should use high school kids to make my medicines."
Hey, that's a $748 difference. What's the public's reaction like?
The overriding response was that they enjoy the story of kids succeeding. But some people did point out the students' alternative option of creating more affordable drugs is not viable due to regulations. Here's an example. "Too bad that issues with the FDA, as well as if it's already patented, will cause it to be almost impossible to sell in the U.S.
All right, I understand. What else is trending out there today?
A picture of a Texas man holding a "You Belong" sign outside a mosque is making the rounds. Justin Norman of Dallas recently stood near the Islamic Center of Irving with a sign that reads, "You belong, stay strong, be blessed, we are one America." He has been interviewed by multiple media outlets since then and said he wanted to share peace with his neighbors after the election. Social media users mostly welcomed this story, with one user writing, "This is how we change our world for the better. Each of us do our part. This guy can serve as an inspiration for us all." Steve?
Certainly sounds like it, G. Many thanks, International Edition's G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
In Ras Al Khair, Saudi Arabia, workers make a living in the desert extracting natural resources, bauxite for aluminum, and phosphorus for fertilizer. Khalid Al-Madaifer is the CEO of the mining company Ma'aden, a new industrial city that did not exist 9 years ago.
There was nobody at all other than a good number of camels.
The kingdom has a plan to diversify its economy called Vision 2030. Rich in natural resources, the government is eager to see the sector grow. Madaifer's company is the first project to use phosphate in the Arab state, a mineral that's 35 million years old.
But it required infrastructure, and now the infrastructure is there.
With lower oil prices comes less revenue, so the Arab state is hopeful that it can expand its source of income with the growth in mining more natural resources. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Fans of the late heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali and Brazilian football star Pele will have the opportunity to buy some of their personal items this week at an auction in Los Angeles. International Edition's David Byrd tells us items including some of Ali's gloves and one of Pele's jerseys will be up for sale on Saturday.
If you've ever wanted to own a piece of sports history, now's your chance. Julian's Auction House in Los Angeles will have several items from both Muhammad Ali and Pele up for sale this week. The items were accumulated by renowned photographer Howard Bingham, who, in addition to chronicling Ali's career, also became one of the late champion's best friends. Bingham has offered some rare items, including the gloves Ali wore in his fight against Argentine Oscar Bonavina in 1970. Darian Julian is the owner of Julian's Auctions.
The top lot of the auction is we have fight-worn gloves Ali wore when he fought Oscar Bonavina in 1970, and he won in the 15th round. And they're really important gloves because obviously they're fight-worn gloves, but they're also, a lot of his fight-worn items don't come up for auction very often. We estimate them 60,000 to 80,000.
Bingham is also offering the mouthpiece that Ali wore during his epic 1974 battle with George Foreman, the Rumble in the Jungle, where Ali recaptured the heavyweight title with an eighth-round knockout. Darian Julian says the mouthpiece is an intimate item, but the fact that Ali wore it in the historic fight makes it something a collector would want.
You know, it's such a personal item, but it's something that he wore. It's also signed by Muhammad Ali. We estimate those $5,000 to $7,000, but again, because it's from the historic fight and such a unique item, that it'll sell for a lot more.
Other items up for sale include several drawings by Ali, a box of cigars given to Howard Bingham and autographed by the late Cuban leader Fidel Castro, and a tablecloth on which Ali sketched several images while at dinner with John Travolta, and he and Travolta later autographed. There's also an autographed torch from the 1996 Olympic relay. Football fans might want to bid on some of the memorabilia from Brazilian great Pelé, who helped lead his country to 3 World Cup titles. Darian Julian of Julian's Auction says a jersey worn by the football great at his club Santos is up for bid.
We have a really important shirt of Pelé's that he wore in 1971 in a match of Santos versus Chelsea, where Pelé wore it the entire game. And it's also signed by Pelé. We also have his personal passport from 2005 and 2010.
Other items from Pelé include a 1969 Brazil national football team jersey signed by all members of the team that would eventually go on to win the 1970 World Cup, and Pelé's personal passports used for travel around the world. Several of the footballer's personal items and awards are also up for bid. The auction, called Icons and Idols Sports 2016, also features items from Argentine football star Diego Maradona, Zinedine Zidane of France, England's David Beckham, and modern stars Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. The auction will be held December 3rd. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
President Obama Thursday night marked his final time to light the national Christmas tree.
Are you guys ready to count down?
Yeah.
We're going to start from 5. You ready?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hey! Merry Christmas, everybody!
Sounds like fun time out there, huh? Mr. Obama offered a wish that Americans will care for the sick, the hungry, and the downtrodden this holiday season and treat one another as they would like to be treated themselves. The president said that message rounds out his family's Christian faith and that of Americans of all backgrounds. Mr. Obama reflected on his 8 years in office and said the United States is a country that has come back from economic crisis, from wars, and national tragedies. The lighting ceremony tradition began in 1923 and takes place in President's Park, that is just south of the White House here in Washington. Mr. Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama turned on the red, white, and blue lights that adorn the massive tree with help from their daughter, Sasha. Performers at this year's ceremony included Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood, Kelly Clarkson, Mark Anthony. Yolando Adams was there as well, along with the Lumineers, James Taylor, Chance the Rapper, and the host of the evening was Eva Longoria. Now a little holiday music from the group Pentatonix.
Waiting for Santa to arrive. Oh, and all the love will show. Cause everybody knows it's Christmas time. And all the kids will see the gifts under the tree. It's the best time of year for the family. It's a wonderful feeling. Hear the love in the room from the floor to the ceiling. It's that time of year. Christmas time is here. And with the blessings.
Yeah, Pentatonix, one of the popular a cappella groups here in the U.S., along with Take Six and Naturally Seven Great Guys. Listen, thanks everyone for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Latest world news is straight ahead. We hope you'll stay tuned. For our director Tracy Carter and engineer Nelson Lopes, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Friday. Now a bit more of Pentatonix singing Happy Holidays. And everybody's playing just for sound, celebrating those special times we shared. Happiness, cause love is in the air, and all the love will show. Cause everybody knows it's Christmas time, and all the kids will see the gifts under the tree. It's the best time of year for the family. Love in the room from the floor to the ceiling. It's that time of year. Christmas time is here. And with a message from above, God sent you his love. And everything's okay. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. It's a time to celebrate. Oh, put your worries aside. Oh, and open up your mind. See the world right by your side. It's Christmas time.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As Syrian and Russian planes continued their horrific bombing of eastern Aleppo, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power excoriated the Syrian regime and its Russian ally for their relentless war on the Syrian people. In an address at the U.N. Security Council, Ambassador Power said, "The reality is that the Assad regime and Russia are continuing their starve, get bombed, or surrender strategy in eastern Aleppo to see if any will surrender to the Assad regime, a regime that, as both we and the Syrian people know, has systematically tortured those who have found themselves under its custodial authority." Ambassador Power listed by name some of those involved since 2011 in killing and injuring civilians with Syrian government military assaults on cities and residential areas. "The United States will not let those who have commanded units involved in these actions hide anonymously behind the facade of the Assad regime," she said. She named Major General Adib Salema, Brigadier General Adnan Abud Hilwe, Major General Jazdat Salbi Mawas, Colonel Suhail Hassan, and Major General Tahir Hamid Khalil. Ambassador Power also took note of the suffering and torture that takes place in detention centers throughout Syria and promised that the individuals who run these centers will one day be held accountable for their crimes. She named several of these individuals as well: Major General Jamil Hassan, Brigadier General Abdul Salam Fard Mahmoud, Brigadier General Ibrahim Mala, Colonel Kuse Mihoub, Brigadier General Salha Hamad, Brigadier General Shafis Massa, Major General Rafiq Shihadeh, and Hafiz Makhlouf. Ambassador Power pointed out that non-state terrorist groups in Syria have also committed heinous crimes against civilians, and she condemned such actions in the strongest terms, noting that ISIL's atrocities are in a category unto themselves, which is why the United States leads a 67-member coalition to defeat this terrorist organization. But, as President Barack Obama recently said, it is Assad who has decided that destroying his country, turning it to rubble, and seeing its population scattered or killed was worth it for him to cling to power. Ambassador Power declared all United Nations member states must be clear that the Assad regime and their allies are responsible for this destruction. Attacks on civilians fuel terrorism. They don't defeat terrorism. Perpetrators must know that, like their ignominious predecessors through history, they will face judgment for their crimes.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4.